Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, deinem Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich bin unendlich dankbar, dass du hier bist, denn meine Vision ist es, in meinem Leben so viele Menschen wie möglich dazu zu inspirieren, in Kontakt zu kommen mit ihrer eigenen Kraft und ihre Kraft tatsächlich zu leben und darüber bewusst zu werden, dass wir zu so viel mehr in der Lage sind, als wir uns meistens selbst zutrauen und dass es eine so wunderschöne Reise ist, zu sich selbst und herauszufinden, wer wir eigentlich wirklich sind. Und genau darum geht es hier in diesem Podcast. Du findest ganz viel Inspiration mit fantastischen, inspirierenden Interviewgästen, mit Solo-Folgen von mir, mit Meditation und alles hat wirklich hier immer das Ziel und den Sinn, dich dazu zu inspirieren, das Leben zu leben, was du gerne leben möchtest und in Kontakt zu kommen mit deiner inneren Kraft und dich daran zu erinnern, wie wichtig es ist, dass du hier bist. Und heute in diesem Podcast habe ich einen Interviewgast, also wirklich dieses Interview, das hat mich selber so von den Socken gehauen und bis jetzt bin ich immer noch komplett begeistert und dankbar, dieses Gespräch führen zu dürfen und es vor allen Dingen jetzt auch mit dir teilen zu dürfen. Und zwar ist das Interview heute mit der wundervollen Elizabeth Gilbert. Und Elizabeth Gilbert ist die Autorin von über 9 Büchern. Und zwar hat sie geschrieben Eat, Pray, Love. Dieses Buch wirst du höchstwahrscheinlich kennen und du hast wahrscheinlich sogar auch den Film gesehen. Sie ist die Autorin von einem meiner Lieblingsbüchern, Big Magic, wo es darum geht, wirklich in die eigene Kraft zu kommen und vor allen Dingen auch die eigene Kreativität zu leben und sich zu erlauben, das ins Leben zu bringen, was du gerne leben möchtest. Und sie hat ein neues Buch geschrieben, City of Girls, was jetzt gerade letztes Jahr erschienen ist, wo es darum geht, um eine junge Frau in New York, die sich ja auf ihre eigene Reise begibt und auch ein ganz, ganz tolles Buch. Und in diesem Interview heute, also ich bin mir sicher, es wird dir mindestens genauso gut gefallen wie mir und du wirst so, so viel daraus für dich mitnehmen, das verspreche ich dir. Du wirst erfahren, was ist der wichtigste Satz, den jede Frau kennen muss? Was ist der eine Satz, der wichtigste Satz einer jeden Frau? Wir sprechen darüber, wie wichtig es ist, auch mal loszulassen und zu gehen und nicht immer zu bleiben, sondern manchmal ist es auch wirklich wichtig, einfach zu sagen, das fühlt sich für mich nicht mehr richtig an. Wir sprechen darüber, wie man mit der Angst davor umgeht, wenn man gehen möchte und die Angst davor, dann verurteilt zu werden oder nicht nett zu sein. Und allein das, was Elizabeth da erzählt hat, das hat mich so berührt und es ist so kraftvoll. Wir sprechen darüber, wie man jetzt gerade mit dieser Situation umgehen kann, in der wir alle sind und was eine neue Perspektive ist und was das eine Wort ist, was dir dabei helfen wird, wesentlich entspannter und mit mehr Vertrauen und Neugierde auch durch diese Zeit gerade gehen zu können. Wir sprechen über Kreativität und was die 3 Phasen sind, durch die wir alle gehen, wenn wir etwas Neues, Kreatives in die Welt bringen möchten. Und Elizabeth erzählt ganz viel aus ihrem eigenen Leben, aus ihren eigenen Erfahrungen und darüber, freundlich zu sich selbst zu sein und zur Welt zu sein. Und ja, wie gesagt, dieses Interview ist eins meiner allerliebsten Interviews, die ich in meinem Leben führen durfte und ich freue mich unendlich, es jetzt mit dir teilen zu dürfen. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, du findest natürlich auf YouTube und auch bei mir auf der Homepage das Video zu dieser Podcast-Folge, wenn du gerne auch es dir dazu anschauen möchtest mit Untertiteln, wo du das Ganze dann auf Deutsch mitlesen kannst, wenn du gerne möchtest. Aber Elizabeth ist auch wundervoll auf Englisch zu verstehen und ja, ich freue mich jetzt einfach so sehr, es mit dir zu teilen und ich würde mich natürlich auch riesig freuen, wenn du zum einen danach Elizabeth schreibst, irgendwie auf Instagram oder wo du sie auch erreichen kannst und ihr einfach vielleicht Danke sagst für dieses fantastische Gespräch und natürlich freue ich mich auch, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler und mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge dalässt. Und bevor es gleich losgeht, habe ich noch eine ganz wundervolle Neuigkeit und zwar ist es ja so, dass wir gerade in einer sehr herausfordernden Zeit stecken und dass wir viele Dinge verändern müssen. Unter anderem auch vielleicht Events, die wir geplant haben, Dinge, die wir vorhatten. Und bei uns ist das natürlich auch so. Und deswegen haben wir uns jetzt ein bisschen umdisponiert und haben entschieden, im Juli ein Online-Event zu veranstalten, das Teamliebe Wohnzimmer Event, wo es darum geht, deinen eigenen Spirit abzuliften und wo es Meditationen mit mir geben wird. Es wird Keynotes geben, es wird Workshops geben aus der Community. Es ist ein 2-Tages-Event Ende Juli, wo es wirklich darum geht, dass du von deinem Wohnzimmer aus dich mit der Community verbinden kannst und wir gemeinsam feiern, tanzen, singen, meditieren, Workshops haben. Und ich würde mich unendlich freuen, wenn du dabei bist. Den Link dazu findest du natürlich in den Shownotes. Und ja, ich würde sagen, es geht jetzt los. Viel Freude mit diesem wundervollen, inspirierenden Interview mit Elizabeth Gilbert. I am so, so grateful and happy to have a woman today in the podcast that I admire so much. And she's just really one of my idols. And I'm so grateful that you're here, Elizabeth Gilbert. Thank you for your time and being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Yeah, I'm really happy and excited. And it's really funny how we got together because a friend of mine, or actually not even a friend, I don't even know her. She wrote me on Instagram and because I was doing a story on Instagram and I was talking about creativity. And then she wrote me a part of your book, Big Magic, which is one of the parts that always was in me, where you said that ideas, they come to you and they stay with you and they wait if you actually live them. And if not, they go to the next person and they wait there and then they go to the next person. So ideas just want to be expressed. And it was amazing because she texted me on Instagram that part of the book and she was like, do you know it? And I was like, yeah, this is actually why I always, when I get an idea, I'm like, okay, let's get it done because else it leaves me. And and then she said that she knows you and then she connected us. And so, yeah.
Awesome. Oh, thanks, Karina.
Amazing. And so you are an author. You have your own really deep, inspiring own spiritual journey, which you also wrote about in Eat, Pray, Love, which is actually now 10 years anniversary, right? It was.
Yeah. It's been even more than 10 years. I think it came out in 2006. So we're coming up on 14 years. It was 20 years ago that I was traveling for that book. Yeah. It's been, it's amazing to imagine how quickly the time has gone, but yeah, there are young women reading that book now who were in diapers when I was on that journey, who are saying that the book is influencing their lives. And I'm like, cool. That is so cool. You were just a baby when I was doing that. And now it's influencing you. I'm so glad.
It's amazing. Yeah, actually, me. Kind of.
I certainly hope you were not in diapers.
I was not, but I was very little. let's go back for a second to the moment you actually started your journey. And when was it? You published a book in 2006. And when was the journey? When did you do it?
I left in September of 2003, and I came back at the end of October 2004. So it actually was a little more than a year. It turned out to be 13 months. I wasn't ready to come home.
And if we would go back now in time to September 2003 and visit Elizabeth there, who was she back then?
Oh, she was half-baked. I was a half-baked cake. There was something, I was on the right path. I was finally on the right path, even to have made the decision to leave my job, to leave New York, to leave I had a really good job that was not going to be waiting for me when I got back. So it was a big risk. And to get rid of all of my belongings and to give myself this year. I there was something in me that knew that this was going to be very good for me. I was also incredibly nervous because I had just jumped off the cliff. You know, I had only a few years earlier the life that everybody says that you're supposed to want. I had a really good position in journalism at an excellent magazine. I was a staff writer at GQ magazine. I had published 3 books already. I was on the right path with my career. I was a novelist. At that point, I was married. I had a nice big house in the suburbs. Like, everything was going according to plan. The only problem was that I wanted to die. So there was just that small problem. just that one tiny little issue, which is that I wanted to die. And anybody who's read Eat, Pray, Love knows that story. So I won't go through it already, but I had to throw that entire life away. But you and I were speaking a little bit before we started recording, and you were telling me about the trajectory of your life and about this idea that you had and then what it's grown into. And I was congratulating you on it. And you said, yeah, but it wasn't that easy, right? It wasn't that easy at the time. And I was nodding and smiling because I know, I know what it feels like to jump off the cliff. And you can look back on it later and say, oh, I was so wise to do that. Of course, I was following my intuition. I was going in the right direction. But the reality is that you don't know when you jump off the cliff whether you are going to break your neck when you hit the landing or whether everything is going to be okay. And we are all grown-ups here. We're all adults here. So let's speak very freely about the fact that sometimes people jump off the cliff and it doesn't work. You know, they start a new business and it fails, or they, you know, try some new thing and it's a disaster. Like, there's no promises that, you know, if it was easy and if it was promised, everybody would be doing it. Everybody would be doing it all the time. So I just remember getting on that plane to Rome. And I'll tell you what my biggest fear was. My biggest fear was that I was going in the wrong direction. That I would spend this entire year traveling, and at the end of it, I would be even more lost, that I would be even farther away from myself, that I would have done nothing more but waste all my money and a year of my life to just end up even farther away from my true self. So that was my biggest fear. And I remember sitting on that plane, and I've never experienced the takeoff of a plane as dramatically as I felt at that time, because I felt that, you know, the pressure pushing me. Who knows whenever people will be on airplanes again. So I'll describe what it feels like. I felt the pressure of it pushing at me, and it just felt like a rocket, you know, shooting me into the unknown. And I was doing without knowing, and there were no guarantees, and I was scared, but I was also excited.
Wow. And now we have 2020. And if you could say something to that young Elizabeth in that airplane, knowing what you know now, what would you tell her?
I would tell her, this is the most accurate thing you have ever done in your life. And I would give her a warning. And the warning would be, don't stop at the end of a year. Because I still had this feeling that what I was doing was very selfish, that it was, that it was self-absorbed, that I was taking a break from being responsible and respectable, and that I was giving myself just 1 year. I pushed it to 13 months at the end, but I was giving myself just 1 year. And then in my mind, I already had this thought: at the end of that year, I promise that I will return to being a respectable, responsible, civilized human being. And that was my only mistake. My only mistake was that I thought that the journey had to end, and I was going to then like tuck myself back in and zip myself back up and return back to the States and become a responsible person again. And I did do that. And I don't regret it, because those were beautiful years in my second marriage. But it wasn't the right plan. Now I get it. Now I understand that I was never meant to be a respectable, responsible person.
Now we have 2020. How many books have you written by now?
I have written 9 books. I've published 8 of them. And my most recent book is actually, we were talking about it before. It was just published in paperback in Germany. And it's called City of Girls. And I was very happy that the German publisher kept the title in English. They wrote me a long letter explaining why it sounded better in English than it would have sounded translated in German. So they decided to keep it. And it's a really fun, light-hearted, novel about New York City in the 1940s and a theater company in Manhattan and a young girl who basically runs away from home, from her very respectable and very responsible family. And she runs up to New York City and falls in with a bunch of showgirls and dancers and actors, and she has an extremely wild experience in New York. And she's writing the book, my character is writing the book from the age of 95, and she's looking back at her youth, and at her, the mistakes that she made and the adventures that she had. And it's a lot of the book is about sex. It's about a young woman who refuses to operate with the standards of the day about what is considered responsible and respectable for a girl. And it's about a woman who is a sensual and sexual being for her entire life. And it's fun. I wrote it as a piece of escapism for myself, and I offered it to the world as a piece of escapism for the world. So I feel like it's a pretty good book to be reading right now, because it will completely take you out of your problems of coronavirus and this disaster. It will transport you to another time, and I'm hoping that it will bring people some relief from their problems of their mind right now.
It's beautiful. There you, I mean, it's a topic sort of your life to, with this character of a woman sort of who frees herself or who follows her soul mission. And what would you say, because I think many women are right now in a place, or I have the feeling that there is a strong awakening of feminine energy and of women waking up. So I think we are right now in a time where many women actually really feel this calling to do what they are here for and to live their true purpose and their energy and what they dream of, and to not put themselves into all these boxes you also described yourself, like to be, you have to be somehow respectful and you have to do what everyone expects you to do, and you are not allowed to dream too big and to go what your heart tells you to do. So with all the knowledge you have now, what would you say, how especially women, how we can be more brave and more to really step into, what is the name of the character in the new book, in City of Girls?
Her name is Vivian.
Vivian?
Vivian, uh-huh.
So how can we become more like Vivian? How can we dare to be more ourselves, to be more in our also sexual energy, all in what we are? How can we express ourselves more freely?
Okay, so I have a few thoughts, and I'm just randomly, I don't have a prepared answer for this, so let's see what happens. The first thought I had is that the liberation of a woman is not something that happens once. It's something that you have to continue to do. And I think that the very innocent, I don't even want to use the word mistake, maybe the very innocent misunderstanding that I made around the time of Eat, Pray, Love, was that I had liberated myself and it was over. My liberation was complete and it was over. It's actually not true. You have to constantly liberate yourself. You have to liberate yourself every single day in small ways, and every once in a while, periodically through your life, in big ways. And that's gonna keep happening, to free yourself from something, and then you fall into something else that starts to feel like a prison. And oftentimes you might find that the thing that felt like freedom 6 years ago will now feel like a prison. So for me, when I got my job at GQ magazine in my early 20s, that felt like liberation to me. And it was liberation to me, because I went from having to do freelance work and trying to make it a salary to suddenly I had a really good job. I had health benefits. I had great assignments. I loved my editors. I loved the job, you know? And then 6 years later, that job was no longer freedom for me, because there was nothing more for me to learn in there. And it had become repetitive, and my stories all felt the same to me. And so the mistake that you can make is to say, well, you know, I went through so much trouble to get this job. I need to hold on to it now, because sometimes I think about it this way, my younger self would look at me now and say, are you crazy? That's the best job in the entire world. You've got to hold on to that. And it was for her. It was the best job in the world for her 6 years ago. But now for me, it's not anymore. And that's the same with relationships. A relationship that can feel like freedom at one point in your life where you're like, I have finally found the person with whom I can be completely free, can change over time. And then that can become, a prison is a very strong word because it sounds like it's cruel, but it can become a place of no more freedom. Mm. And so you have to remain willing to let yourself out of jail multiple times in your life. Multiple times in your life. And that can, and it can be the same with the place that you live. You know, you find this beautiful apartment and you're like, this is it. This is what I've always dreamed of. I feel so free here. Okay, 7, 8, 10, 12 years later, it's finished. The energy in it is finished. I think that people and places are meant to be in our lives for a reason and for a season. And when that reason is over and that season is over, it's time to move on. And if you're not staying awake to the places in your life where you're falling asleep, you have to stay awake to watch yourself falling asleep and be like, okay, I'm falling asleep here. Now, if you're happy, if you're really settled into something and it really feels good, then stay. You know, don't change just to change. Mm-hmm. But for me, the greatest indication that it's time for me to leave a situation or a relationship or a work setting or a geography is that I start to be in pain. And I've learned over the years to really trust that I'm a very simple mechanism. I'm actually a very simple organism. I really only have two settings. I basically have an on switch and I have an off switch. You know, it's that easy. I don't really have a volume control. It's like, and my on switch is when I'm going in the correct direction, then I'm on. And when I'm going in the wrong direction, then I'm off. And very quickly, I will start to get sick. I will start to get resentful. I will start to get depressed. I will start to find that I'm in a doctor's office asking if I can get a prescription for antidepressant pills, asking if I can get a prescription for sleeping pills. I'll be suddenly wondering if maybe there's something wrong with my hormones. I'll think that there's something will be wrong in me, in my body, in my spirit, in my heart. And I do associate it with going to doctors. When I start going to doctors, even when I start going to holistic doctors and naturopaths and good doctors and acupuncturists, and I start having problems like, oh, my neck isn't turning in the right way and my back hurts all the time and my digestion isn't working and I'm not sleeping and there's something, and I always say there's something wrong with me, right? And the reality is there's actually nothing wrong with me. What's happening is that my spirit and my body and my heart are sending me signals saying there's something wrong with the situation that you're in. There's something wrong with the situation that you are in, and it's time to change. And as soon as I change it, all of a sudden I'm good. I don't need the sleeping pills. I don't need the hormones. I don't need the chiropractor. I don't need, like, all of a sudden I'm just, my body's working. Everything is working. So it's just my body's way of telling me this is not the right situation for you anymore. And I've gotten to be so, I trust it. I trust it so completely that I don't wait anymore for the pain to become excruciating. I just changed the situation. And I recently ended a relationship, a romantic relationship. And I was so happy about the fact that I'm old enough now to be able to say to somebody, look, I have great feelings of love for you, but I'm not doing well in this relationship. Like, I'm not doing well. My body hurts, my mind hurts, my heart hurts, and this is not a good environment for me. And so I'm going to take Liz away now. I'm going to take her out of here because I always know that I can take care of myself. So I'm going to take her out of here and I'm going to go away, and it's going to be sad for a little while. But I can't stay in a situation where I'm not thriving. I really only have two settings. I'm either thriving or I'm collapsing. And I actually think that's true of everybody. But I think that what happens is that we get used to the pain and we think that the pain is natural and we think that we're supposed to learn how to manage our depression and how to manage our anxiety and how to manage our pain and how to make our relationship work and how to make that job work and how to learn how to love the city that you don't love. You know, so much of our lives, we're just forcing and pushing and forcing and pushing when it actually, I'm sorry to say it, and I hope it doesn't scare people, but this is just how I live. Just go. Just go. And you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say that for you. I should never tell anybody else what to do. In my life, I have learned that the answer is just go. It's time to go, and you're allowed to go find a happier position in the world, and then I do well. And if that position turns out to feel like suffering after a few years, then I'll change again. And that's the best that I can offer on this. And again, I would never preach for other people to do their lives this way, but this is honestly how I live my life. And I've gotten really efficient at it and really fast, where it's like, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. and I just navigate really quickly now, and I don't hesitate. And if I made a mistake and I went the wrong way, I'm very quick to say this was a mistake. And I'll go back on the trail.
Wow, yeah, that is very, very powerful. And I think, well, what happens to me when I'm listening to you, first of all, I totally agree. I absolutely know what you mean when you talk about the on-off switch. I think we all have it. We know when we are good and we know when we are not. And I think especially women, we have the tendency to, in German we say, die Dinge schönreden, so we talk them nice. Like we try to make them look better than they actually feel. And also what you said, that we always start then to think something's wrong with me. I have to change something within me, instead of being honest and just saying, no, the situation I'm in is just not right for me. It's just not where I'm supposed to be right now.
This is the most powerful words I can tell you. The strongest, most powerful words for a woman to learn how to say are these: this is not working for me. This is not working for me. And that's, for instance, how I ended that relationship. This is not working for me. It's nothing against the person. This is not working for me. And I'm fully responsible for taking care of myself. I take 100% accountability for taking care of Liz. And if something is not working for her, and I have the power to change it, then I will change it. Now, if something is not working for me and I don't have the power to change it, then that's a different story. You know, then we have to work on surrender or acceptance. But most of the time, you actually have the power to change it. Most of the time. I don't have the power to change the coronavirus. You know, so I'm not going to look at the coronavirus epidemic and say, look, this is not working for me. You have to change this. This virus can't be happening right now. Like that's beyond my control. But I can decide, where am I going to go during the coronavirus? Who am I going to see? What am I going to listen to on in the news? What am I going to expose my mind to? How am I going to use my hours in a way that works for me? And that's it. This is not working for me is very, very strong.
Have you ever made a decision that you regret in, like, after looking back to it?
Oh, I've made lots of decisions that I regret. because I'm experimenting with my life, you know, and we're all here in Earth School and there are no instructions and I'm doing my very best, you know, and I'm trying something because I thought in that moment that that decision would make me happy. And sometimes the only way to find out is to try it. And then it didn't work. And I think the most compassionate way that I can look at my younger self, and by my younger self, I don't necessarily mean my 18-year-old self or my 28-year-old self. I'm 50 years old now. I mean, like last week, my younger self last week, I can look at her and I can see something that she did that turned out to be in the wrong direction. And I can just say very compassionately to her, nice try, you know, good guess. That was a really, really good guess. That was a really good guess. Why wouldn't you think that that would make you happy? That was a really, really good guess. It turned out that it wasn't true. Okay, so now we're going to go in this direction. And I really think, like, if there's one thing that I can offer to the women who are listening, if you can look back at yourself and say, good guess, like, nice try. I feel like that's really kind, because we don't have the directions and the instruction manual in front of us. That's how we find out. And I'm getting, like, I have less regrets now, because I'm learning as I'm getting older. It takes a really long time to learn how to navigate a person. You know, I've had this body and I've had this spirit for 50 years, and I'm still learning how to operate a Liz Gilbert. You know, I'm like, you know, like, they dropped my soul into the machinery of this body, and I'm still learning, like, okay, how does she work? How does she function? What makes it, you know, like, I'm getting really good at it. And the way that I know that I'm getting good at it is because I'm happy most of the time. Like, I've really figured out how to be happy. It's very rare that I'm not happy. And so I know that I'm learning how to operate her. But when I was 22, how in the world was I supposed to know what was going to make me happy? And when I got married when I was 24, how in the world would I know not to do that? My mother got married when she was 24. My sister got married when she was 24. Everyone in my family gets married when they're 24. I don't know. It just seemed like a good guess. I basically looked at the man who was standing next to me and said, oh, I'm 24. It's 24 o'clock. It's time to get married. You know, like, it was such a good guess. You know, and then the only way that I could find out that that wasn't the right direction for me was because of the pain that I experienced once I was in that marriage. And so pain is a really good teacher for me. And it teaches me that I'm going in the wrong direction. And all I can hope these days is that I don't make myself stay in situations for years that are painful anymore. You know, I made myself stay in that marriage 4 years longer than I should have, because I felt like I had to. And I was trying to be a good person, and I was trying to be a good wife, and I was trying to be a nice person and a kind person. And so I put myself into pain for 4 years, and I could have saved me and him so much pain if I had just walked up to him and said, this is not working for me. This is not working for me. Now let's talk about how we're going to take this thing apart, because I can't stay here anymore, because it's not working for me. And if he had said, why, I would have said, I don't know, but it's not working for me. Well, what are you going to go do now? I don't know, but I'm not going to do this anymore, because this is not working for me. You know, that could have saved him and me years of suffering. And now I'm faster at it. I'll do that after a couple weeks now. I won't make myself stay in hell. I just won't make myself stay in hell. I love myself too much for that. Honey, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I find this really inspiring. And the question I have is, because you just said it, you stayed 4 years longer than, like, looking backwards, you may have done now, but you wanted to be nice, you wanted to be a good person. And I think it's such a thin line between knowing actually when is the time to go, and also when is the time to maybe fight for something, or maybe when is the time to grow together, because sometimes, especially in relationships, it's also a space for growth, and you can learn things. And, like, I think it's a very, very difficult decision you have to make. And I was just wondering, do you how did you deal, or still today, how do you deal with the fear that also comes up in the moment, you know, I'm going to make a brave decision that many people maybe are not going to like, but I'm going to liberate myself. And in the same moment of liberation, I think there's this immense fear coming up. So how do you go through this fear?
I'll tell you, I know the fear that you're talking about, and that fear put me into a 2-year-long depression after I left my first marriage, because I was so afraid that I was a bad person and that I had broken my promise. I made a promise to this man and I broke my promise. I made a promise to my family and I broke my promise, and I made a promise to the community, and I had to really put myself through some more hell about that until I finally forgave myself for that. Now I'm much more kind to myself. And so now when I'm in that kind of fear, the way that I'll speak to myself is this way. I will say, Lizzie, I see how scared you are. I see that you're afraid that you are a quitter and that you never fulfill anything because you're always running away. That might be true. We'll find out. But I'm going to get you to a better place where we can really be in a safe and warm. How can I explain this? A friend of mine said to me, only go where you feel warm, safe, and loved. Only go to people who make you feel warm, safe, and loved. And only stay in relationships that make you feel warm, safe, and loved. And that's it. That's all I can do. And so when I would get scared, like I'll think back to a relationship I ended recently that was not as traumatic because I just trust myself now. I trusted myself enough to know that I did not feel warm, safe, or loved in that room. And I didn't like drop it overnight, you know, like we talked it over and we did things and we went to counseling together. But I could see that it wasn't going, I just could see that this isn't going to work for me. This isn't going to work for me. And I don't feel warm, safe, and loved. And the really, really good news in my life is that I now know what I didn't know when I was 28, 29, and 30 years old. I know that if everything else in the world fails, I know how to make myself warm, safe, and loved. I know how to do that for myself. And so it's not scary anymore for me to leave situations and relationships and people where I don't feel warm, safe, and loved, because I know that I can provide that for myself. And the way that I learned that was by being alone and then talking to that voice inside of me and saying, what do you need, darling? Like, what would make you feel good today? What do you need? Should we take a bath? Should we go for a bicycle ride? Should we go be with a friend who makes us feel warm, safe, and loved? you know, it doesn't even mean just being in solitude. It means, where can we go today where we will feel warm, safe, and loved? I will take you there. I will take you there. And I'll take you there again tomorrow. And I'll take you there again the next day. And any ideas of spirituality that people ever try to give me, where the idea doesn't make me feel warm, safe, and loved, I know that that is not my spirituality. Any teaching that anybody tries to give me where I do not feel warm, safe, and loved, then that is not a teaching for me. It might be a teaching for somebody else, but that's not what my soul responds to. My soul and my heart respond to warmth, safety, and love. And that's what I'm providing for myself. I've been alone for 2 months right now in quarantine, totally by myself in this little house where I'm living out in the country. And I am so happy because I'm keeping myself warm, safe, and loved. And that's my priority every single day when I wake up. Okay, Liz, what are we going to do today that'll feel good? Like, what is the food that's going to make you feel good? What's the, like, who do you want to call on the phone today? And I stay away from anything and anybody that takes me in the opposite direction. But I think the major thing is that now I know I can do it for myself. So it's not like I'm leaving a bad relationship and I feel like I have to go find somebody else now. I have to go find somebody else who will make me feel warm, safe, and loved. I can do it. You know, I can do it. I've got Liz. So other people can come and go from my life. They can enter my life. They can leave my life. We can be together for a while. We can be together for a long time. They can leave me. They can divorce me. I can divorce them. They can die. I can die. Anything can happen in the world, but I've got my soul in my own hands. And she is my priority. And I take really good care of her. And that helps me through the fear. I just speak to myself lovingly and say, I know it's scary, but we're going to do this. We're going to be brave now. And I've got you.
I wish that you write a book about that. Can I drop a wish here? that you write a book about kindness to to your own soul? Because I think it's, I'm honest. I talk to so many people and I interview so many people, like really huge spiritual leaders, so many people. And I honestly have to say, you're the first person I talk to where I can really feel that kindness. You radiate it. You are this kindness. Also, the way you texted me, just the way you are, it's very, very special. I don't remember actually. I really, maybe my mother, but I really would have to recall someone who radiates such a kindness. And I can tell it's because you are that kind to yourself. I mean, and this is really beautiful for me to see that. Yeah.
Thank you, sweetheart. Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, everybody that I know, everybody who I love and care about, if I were to ask them what their aspirations are for life, the people who are really close to me, like the people who I'm attracted to and who I want to have as friends and who I want to work with and want to be around, every single one of those people would be in agreement. I guarantee you 100% agreement. Every single one of them would say that they long to have the power and the kindness to be able to practice universal human compassion. Like if I asked you, I don't even have to know you to, I know the answer. I know that you would love it, that you would love to be a person who can practice universal human compassion.
Yeah.
But I also know that you probably are sometimes really mean to yourself and that you set really high perfectionist standards for yourself and that you haven't forgiven yourself for some things that you did in your life and that you, like, I don't need to know the details. I just know because you're just like me, right? So what I've learned over time is that universal human compassion that does not include loving kindness toward the self is not universal. Like it's just right there in the title. The title says universal. That means all of it. And that means also you. You can't exclude yourself from that because that's the person who you're going to be spending the most of your time with. And the largest majority of your history of your life is going to be spent with you. And that person is exactly as deserving of compassion, forgiveness, and kindness as literally any other human being on earth. And I actually think that when we withhold kindness from ourselves, it's weirdly narcissistic, especially when we try to be kind and compassionate people to the world. The narcissism is, I'm the only one who doesn't deserve a loving, kind voice. I'm the only one who doesn't deserve a smile. I'm the only one who doesn't deserve a loving, warm embrace, right? And where I started to break down that narcissism in myself was when I started saying to myself, what makes you so special? What makes you so special, Liz, that you think that everybody else in the world should be forgiven except you? Wow, talk about ego. Talk about ego. So no, I don't think I'm special. I just think I'm a human being who's having a really hard time learning how to be a human being in a really difficult curriculum in earth school, who has made some really big mistakes, who will probably make more of them, who's trying her best, and who deserves a break. You know? And I let her off the hook every single day and say, good guess, nice try. Good guess, nice try. You know, that is to me the beginning of universal human compassion. And because I've been doing that with myself now for so many years, it does make it easier for me to be around other people when they're flying off the handle or when they're, you know, I know how to sit in the room with somebody who's really unhappy because I've sat with myself when I'm really unhappy. And I've known the things that I needed to hear myself say to me. And I know that that's what I can give to that person, which is no advice, no trying to correct them, no giving them suggestions, and just saying, I will sit with you. I can see that you're having a hard time, and it would be my honor to sit with you and just be here with you. And I've had hard times too, and I know what that's like, and I'm right here. And that's the best that I have to offer.
Yeah, that's beautiful because we usually have the urge to always tell people what to do, right?
Right. Yeah, as if like, but I love what my teacher Byron Katie says. She goes, "You always want to tell other people what to do. Why? Because your life is so great." So that they can be more like you. Like, look at you. Look at like, are you really, what are you selling? You know, I know that I have like a lifetime of work to do on myself. So I can keep myself busy all day long working on learning how to be kind to myself. It's a full-time job.
Well, I really hope that one day because I want to read this over and over again. So I hope that you one day write a book about self-kindness and about the voice that is inside of yourself and how we can all learn to be kinder within ourselves. Oh. I mean, it would be beautiful. So maybe one day I will buy it.
Well, you might be onto something there, my dear.
I
might be onto something.
So can we just make a quick detour
sure.
to Big Magic, because this was a book that I would love everyone to read this book, because I get so many questions about, Laura, how do I get started? I'm afraid to write my book, or I'm afraid to start my podcast, or I have these ideas and these visions, but I don't know how to get it done, or like a lot of fear also around this topic. And in the beginning, I mean, we quickly talked about this, where this passage in the book that I love so much about the ideas that I like imagine them like light beings, that they just come in you and they stay with you, and they're like, okay, can we get it done? Like, we're waiting. And if you're just not doing anything, they just fly away and go to the next person. So can we maybe talk a little bit about creativity and the creative process? Because you are an amazing author. Your books are brilliant, beautiful, and yeah, so you really know how to do it. Oh. If I can ask anyone, then
thanks, honey. Well, you know, what I think of immediately is this. I think that, and this is, you thought that you were asking a question that was a detour, but you weren't, because it's actually the same answer. So a lot of times when people coach people about creativity, the word that they use is discipline. And they try to teach discipline, and they teach how you have to, you know, put your head down, and you've got to work a certain number of hours a day, and you've got to stay with it, and you've got to push through it, and you've got to, you know, make a commitment. You know, there's all of this talk around, like, and it's all very militaristic, you know. It's all very much like it sounds frightening, and then sometimes the language is language of competition. Like, you've got to prove that you can do this. You've got to show them that you have more than they think you have. You know, there's like this kind of very macho language about it. But here's what I can tell you that I'm always careful to say that I absolutely know to be true, but I'm pretty sure that this is true. Let me put it that way. Every person who experiences a moment of inspiration experiences it the same way. So when you get an idea and when I get an idea, it feels the same. There's a way that human beings react instinctively to creative inspiration. And it's the same. And it's been the same for every human being across humankind. You get excited, you get nervous, you get distracted. You feel a little bit, it's a little bit like falling in love or jumping out of an airplane. You know, you're like, ooh, this is really exciting, but it's also really scary. And that's the way that I still experience it to this day. And every single human being who has ever sat down on day one to begin trying to create something that until this day was only in your mind, only in your imagination, and today is the day that you're going to sit down and you're going to begin this project, or you're going to try to figure out how to start this business, or you're going to, you know, this vision that you have, or you're going to try to make this piece of art, or you, whatever the thing is. Every single person on day one is really excited and really hopeful that this is going to be great. And then there's day two. And what happens on day two, and this is for everybody, what happens on day two is that you look at what you did on day one and your heart sinks and your stomach starts to hurt and you think, ah, oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. Well, who was I kidding to think, who do I think I am? Who was I kidding to think that this could be done? Like, this is such garbage. And all of those people in my family who told me that I was crazy to do this were right. And all of those people who made fun of me when I was a kid and said that I was stupid were right. And everybody who said that I should take the safe path was correct. And I'm going to go back in my hole. I'm not meant to be doing this. It's no good. And that's true for me on day two still. It's everybody. Everybody starts on day one with excitement. Everybody feels despair, depression, and disappointment and self-loathing on day two. And typically, I think people would tell you that what will get you to day three is discipline, commitment, putting your muscles into it, pushing through. And I actually don't think in my life that's not what gets me to day three, because the depression and the devastation that I feel on day two is so serious that you can't really push through it with discipline. What gets me to day three is forgiveness. Forgiveness to myself for the fact that I am not as good as I want to be, right? It's mercy that I show to myself to say, hey, it's that same voice, it's that same loving voice that says, oh, honey, yeah, you thought you could do that. And you know what? You're not as good as you thought you were. And you're not as good as the people that you're comparing yourself to. And you might never be as good as those people. But why don't we just keep going anyway? Because it's kind of interesting. It's more interesting than quitting. And I will still love you even if the book is no good. And I will still be your friend even if the project doesn't work out. And we're in this together. It's like the way that my soul speaks to my mind and just says, you know, it's okay, do your best. And then you start on day three. And I feel like day three is actually the day that the real thing begins, because you've experienced the high of the anticipation and the ego and all of that. And then you've experienced the crash. And now, if you can love yourself on the other side of that, you can actually begin to work. And it's a very different feeling on day three. It's humble. It's humble. It's just humility of understanding that it's difficult to be a human being, that creativity is weird, that you don't really know how to do it, but you're going to do it anyway, that you don't know how it's going to turn out, but you're going to try it anyway. And it's kind. It's a kind energy. So I want you to understand that when I say day one, day two, day three, I don't necessarily literally mean 24-hour days. It's the first wave of excitement, the first wave of disappointment and depression. And then can you love yourself enough and forgive yourself enough to go to the third part? And the third part is, I will never make anything as good as what I want to make. I will never be as talented as my heroes. I will never look at something I've written and said, that's perfection, but I'm going to do it anyway. And for me, where I come from is I made a promise. I made a promise to the universe a long time ago that I would be a writer, but I never said I would be a good writer. I just said I would be a writer because I think it's a really interesting way to spend my life. And so I'm just going to keep making things. And some of the books are better than other ones. Even I can see that. And some of the books the world loves and some of them they don't love as much. And it's okay. I'm going to keep making them. And because the other question I would have you ask, if you're stuck on day two and you can't get to day three, the question that I would have you ask is, what is the alternative to day three? So I can do day three and I can make something that might not be very good. but if I don't do that, what's the alternative? And I always find that the alternative is to do nothing. It's to do nothing at all. It's to not try. It's to not push myself. And that always just seems kind of boring. Like the alternative to day three is that the rest of your life will be day two. You're just going to stay there in day two forever. And that just doesn't seem like a good place to stay. So that's what usually gives me the courage to take the risk to keep going.
Wow. I love that. I will listen to that many times again. And there's something that really inspired me is the thought that it's just interesting to do it. So that day three, it's just look what happens, look what comes. It's just more interesting. And because I think the interesting takes out the judgment of having it to be good or
always
special. It just has to be interesting, and it is.
It's just interesting.
If it's not good, it's interesting.
I mean, interesting to me is actually one of the most powerful words, because like, I'll give you a really extreme example. The love of my life was this woman named Rhea Elias, who was my best friend, and then we became lovers, and she got terminal cancer, and she was given a diagnosis that she was going to live for only 6 months. She ended up dying after 18 months, and I was with her through her death. If you had asked me before she was diagnosed with cancer, so let's go back 2 years before she got sick, and you were to say to me, Liz, who is the most important person in your world? I would say, but I would say it very secretly because I was married, but I would say, Rhea is the most important person in my world. And if you had said to me, we're going to give you a choice. A lot of people might die and a lot of people might have to leave your life, but you get to choose one person who doesn't leave. Who is the one person that you could keep who's not going to leave? And I would say, absolutely 100% Rhea. You can take everybody else and I'll be sad and I'll go to their funerals and I'll cry and I'll miss them, but don't take Rhea. I can't live without Rhea. That was the one person in the world who I felt I cannot live without. And so then the universe says, we're taking Rhea. Now, that's many, many things. It's tragic. It's devastating. It's terrifying. But do you know what else it is? It's interesting. It's interesting. Personally, for me. And there was a part of me that was like, wow, that's interesting. That's interesting. I've never had anybody in my life before who I felt like I cannot do life without this person. And now that person is going to be gone. Interesting. Wow. Time for some creativity. Time for some creativity. And it's time to have a really open mind. It's time to have a really open mind, because apparently, Liz, the universe thinks that you can live without this person because they're going to arrange it so that she's gone. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do now? And the really great thing is that you don't have to know the answer to that question. You just live into that question, you know? And so that became the question that I was living into. How am I going to do this? Like, what is the post-Rhea world going to be? How am I going to make this good, you know? And one of the things that I refuse to believe, because I really believe in a friendly universe and I believe in a loving universe because I've experienced love and I've experienced so much love within myself to myself. So I believe in that. When that soul voice speaks to me kindly and says, you know, I'm right here, I'm not going anywhere. Like, to me, that's me just eavesdropping on the universe. That's the universe speaking to me, saying, I've got you, I love you. You know, I know it looks really bad, but I'm not going anywhere. You belong to me. You know, so I decided to refuse to believe that the world without Rhea in it would be worse than the world with Rhea in it. And I didn't know how to make that happen. I just decided why would it be worse? Why does it have to be worse? And the question that I decided to live into then was, I decided or realized, it wasn't a decision, it was a realization. There's a life that Liz could only have when Rhea was alive. And that life is now over because she is now dead. But I have to believe that there's also a life that Liz could only have without Rhea in it. And there are things that I would never have done if she was alive. And there are people who I never would have met. And there are projects that I never would have written. And there are all sorts of things. And that life is now in session. And go find out what it is. Go find out what that life is. And I would say that to anybody who's lost somebody, whether you lost them to death or you lost them to a divorce or you lost them to a breakup, and you've got this belief that the world is that you're living in now is worse because they aren't there, I would encourage you to explore the world of the word interesting. Very interesting. Somebody who I thought I could not live without is gone. Super interesting. What am I going to do in this new space? And I feel like creativity and compassion can be with you in every single minute of your life. Compassion towards yourself for how difficult it feels, and creativity to have the curiosity to explore that world and see what's there for you on the other side of that. And to believe that whatever else it is, it's also very interesting. You know, that's how I felt when I realized that the world had just shut down from the coronavirus. I was like, wow, this is interesting. This is really interesting. Nobody who is alive on Earth has ever experienced this. We're all billions of us doing this together at the same time. This is super interesting. How's everybody going to do this? How am I going to do this? Yeah, so interesting will always, I find that when I use the word interesting, it dials down the drama. Because my ego wants it to be dramatic, and it wants it to be traumatic, and it wants it to be a disaster, and it wants it to be a crisis. And instead it's like, well, this is interesting. Huh. Plot twist. I didn't see this coming.
Well, yeah, I will take this with me. It is so powerful. Just this one word that can really change everything. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. You're welcome, honey.
There was also one thing I was thinking when we were talking about creativity, and I just started again to surf here on Maui. And of course, there are people here from Maui who surf, and they look super good when they surf. And
right.
Like, yeah, of course I can do this. And then you go on the wave, and of course you can't, because you're from Germany and you never surf. Obviously. And then I was thinking that success, whatever success is, I mean, let's just say success is doing what you love to do. I think it has way more to do with your willingness to look really stupid than your wish to look good. Because I only will learn to surf really well if I allow myself to go into the ocean with all these super cool Maui surfers and look like the German idiot. Everyone can tell why she's not from here. But I have to be willing to do this and to look really stupid within all of those, to one day, first of all, to just have fun because I love it, and to also, wave by wave, I get better. And then I have, yesterday I was just going surfing for my own in the afternoon with the sunset, and I just had this amazing wave, and I just surfed it all for myself, and I was so happy. And I was just thinking, you have to have this period of looking really, really stupid and not being ashamed for looking stupid or writing something stupid, or I just take this wave right now, to one day just surf it and be happy with it. But everyone needs this period of looking stupid. And I think this is a way bigger part to success than always wanting to look good and making it perfect, because you cannot anyways. Yeah, so
that's very wise and very inspiring, because I've always wanted to learn how to surf.
But you can come anytime here and we go together.
Thank you, sweetheart. That's so cool. Well, I'll tell you, I was having a conversation one time. I was looking, the New York Times always publishes the full results of the New York City Marathon. So whenever the marathon runs, they have a special section. Actually, you know what? I don't know whether they still do it. It might be on the internet now, but years ago, there was a special section of the paper and had every name of everybody who finished the marathon. And then there's another list of names that are called DNF. And that means did not finish, right? So these are the names of the people who did not finish. But then my sister said something so brilliant. She said, but there are millions of names under the category, and they never print these names. DNS, did not start. Did not start. And I would so much rather be a DNF than a DNS. It's like, okay, I might not finish, but I'm definitely going to start.
Yeah, and still you publish on the newspaper.
At least your name is in the newspaper. You know, I think those people are so cool.
Amazing. I have one last question I ask every of my guests in the podcast. So imagine it's the last day of your life. You live a beautiful, long, happy, amazing life. Many, many times where you said, this is not working for me. And many times when you experience pure bliss. So it's the last day of your life. And I would come to you and I would say, Liz, I'm so sorry. There has been a technical problem. And all your books have been deleted. Your website is gone. All your articles, everything you ever wrote is gone. So I would give you a blank page of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, if everything you've ever written is gone, all your wisdom, everything you shared isn't there anymore. And you could write three things down on this paper, three wisdoms you would like the world to know. What would you write down?
I would actually save you the trouble. First of all, I would say to you, it is so kind that you came to visit me on the last day. And I'm going to assume that you've been taking care of me, because you're just, if you're there seeing me on the last day of my life, you were probably one of the people who took care of me when I was dying. So I just want to express my gratitude, because that's a very sacred role to have in somebody's life, to be with them when they're dying. So I'm so glad that I know who's going to be with me on the last day of my life.
Oh, me too. I hope it's okay for you.
Oh, and it's honey, me. I wouldn't even have to write. I wouldn't. Oh, totally. But great. Terrific. It's settled. I wouldn't even have to write three things. I would just write one thing. I would write, be kind to you. And that's it.
Thank you. Well, Liz, thank you so much for this interview. I'm deeply touched and so grateful. And for everything also you've done. And I really just want to acknowledge you for being so honest and so raw in a such a beautiful way, and so kind, that you really radiate this kindness. And I think you did not only inspire me, but everyone who will listen to this interview to just start to be a little bit more kinder towards yourself. Because I think if we are all kinder to ourselves, the world will change. So this is probably...
Well, your world will definitely change. Yeah. And that's the only one that you're ever going to live in. So your world will absolutely change. And that's a great, great, great beginning. So thank you, sweetheart. Be good to you. Be kind to you. And I hope I see you before that death day.
Yeah. Well, we definitely will arrange this. We definitely...
If not, I really appreciate...
One day together on Maui, we'll okay?
The second to the last day, we'll surf, and then we'll go right there. Thank you, sweetheart. Take care.
Thank you so much, Liz. Thank you.
Bye, honey.
Bye, bye.
Ich hoffe, dass du ganz, ganz, ganz beseelt gerade auch aus diesem Interview rausgehst und dass vielleicht auch viel in dir angestoßen wurde, vielleicht mal zu überdenken und vor allen Dingen dich auch daran zu erinnern, dass es dein Leben ist und dass es das Wichtigste ist, dass du in dir glücklich und erfüllt bist und dass es absolut in Ordnung ist, deinen eigenen Weg zu gehen. Du musst dich von niemandem rechtfertigen. Und ich würde mich unendlich freuen, wenn du bei Instagram @LauraMarlinaSeiler mir auf meinem Kanal schreibst, was du für dich mitgenommen hast unter den Post von heute zu der Podcast-Folge, was für dich so das Wichtigste war, deine wichtigste, wertvollste Erkenntnis aus dieser Folge, damit wir das miteinander teilen können und andere Menschen inspirieren können. Und natürlich freue ich mich auch unendlich, wenn du diese Folge teilst, wenn du sie mit allen Menschen auf Facebook, egal wo, dass du sie einfach weiter teilst, weil ich glaube, diese Folge muss in die Welt und die darf und sollen einfach so viele Menschen wie möglich hören. Also Dankeschön dafür. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt einen wunderschönen Tag. Ich hoffe, dass du ganz inspiriert bist. Und wie gesagt, wir werden Ende Juli ein Online-Event veranstalten, wo ich mich natürlich unendlich freue, wenn du dabei bist, wo wir ja ganz tief eintauchen werden in unsere eigene Spiritualität und unseren Spirit upliften und Zeit miteinander verbringen. Und ich freue mich, wenn du da dabei bist. Die Infos dazu findest du in den Shownotes. Und ansonsten schicke ich dir jetzt einfach eine riesengroße Umarmung hier aus Hawaii. Ich denke an dich, ganz viel Liebe, ganz viel Energie zu dir. Es ist schön, dass es dich gibt und bis nächste Woche. Deine Laura.